This is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
What's happening, everybody? It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. The opening drive is brought to you by Cherish. Big stuff coming up today. We'll talk a lot of football. The professor, John Clayton, at 4 o'clock. Kurt Menefee, who will be on the broadcast of the Dragons game, right?
Yep.
He's going to join us. He'll be calling the plays, so he will join us at 5:30 today and get his take on that game and week one, how he's feeling about the XFL, all that good stuff. Look who's here. That's Jim Moore. Country music fan extraordinaire.
Yeah, it was fun.
Was it fun?
Steel Creek Whiskey in Tacoma last night, Lindsay L.
He sent me a video, and he was screaming over the top of the music. It was worth it leaving early at 5:30 today, Bob.
I did say that.
Yes, you did.
Yeah, front row seat there for Lindsay L., and she'll be in Bend tonight. I'm a new Lindsay L. fan. It was more country rock than it was country, so well, I enjoyed it.
I think you have a new fan in her, because she called you out at the...
She did. Somebody...
When Jim got there, he told somebody, I'm Jim Moore. I'm kind of a big deal. You might want to let the artist know.
That wasn't exactly how it happened.
No?
I just ordered my first Jack Daniels on the rocks, and somebody came over to me and said, oh, hey, you know, I listened to your show. And then I'm thinking that maybe she told Lindsay herself that she heard, you know, something about the concert on the show.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's how it happened.
And then somebody showed me a picture of the two of you together, and I've never seen you smile that big.
Yeah, that's what I heard. But you're not at my house. I mean, usually when I'm at my house,
next to my wife, I'm
beaming. Actually, next to River, I'm beaming.
Oh, boy.
Oh, whoa.
Oh, wait, it's Valentine's Day, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, you're getting it started off properly. That'll work out well for tonight. Yeah.
Hey, didn't you get a reservation one time on this show?
I did, and, you know, if you don't get a reservation 2 weeks in advance, you're especially on a Friday night for Valentine's Day. But, yeah, a listener helped me out because he had gone through a breakup with a girlfriend, and he had a reservation, and I didn't. And so he gave me his reservation since he didn't need it anymore, and I used it. It was an Italian place downtown Seattle, and I think I gave him a half rack of beer or something like that for his troubles.
Nice. Look at you. Listeners bailing you out.
Yeah.
It's a fair transaction.
Yeah.
Was last night Valentine's Day? Was that?
Yeah, it was. Kathy told me that we're good.
You're off the hook.
Don't worry about anything.
You're off the hook now.
Still might get a card.
Jim can sleep easy. That's good. All right. So as we said, Professor Clayton at 4 o'clock, Kurt Menefee at 5:30. Meanwhile, Brock and Salk, you know those two guys, they have a podcast. I don't know if you've heard about it. But they were talking Seahawks, and they've got a plan. They've got a three-step plan to fix the Seahawks. Would you like to hear it? I don't know if it falls in line with Salk's idea of rotating offensive linemen for pass or run, because you and Ray Roberts really seem to be impressed with that one. But here's...
Well, my fix for them would be for Salk to stop coming up with ideas.
Well, he's got ideas here.
The best fix for their offense.
Well, let's take a listen. Here's three things to fix for the Seahawks, according to Mike Salk.
Add two pass rushers, meaning Jadeveon Clowney and two pass rushers.
Okay.
So fix your pass rush. Step two, acquire via the draft or free agency an impact corner or safety, an impact member of your secondary. I don't care which position he plays, but I need one or the other. I mean, I have other things to do in the draft, et cetera, later down the line. They don't need to be quite as can't miss, but I want a can't miss impact member of my secondary. And then the third thing for me would be to bring in a defensive mind who is somewhat different.
Somebody not named Ken Norton Jr.
So is that what he's saying there?
Yeah. That's how I took it.
Well, he didn't say he wanted Norton out, but he just wanted a complimentary piece there to help out Ken Norton.
So like an assistant defensive coordinator? Do you think Ken Norton would take exception to that?
Yeah, probably. But, okay. Yeah.
And I don't disagree with step one, because we've talked about it. You want Clowney back, but as much as we think, oh, huge move, that'd be great, everybody breathes a sigh of relief, he comes back. You had him last year, and this was a terrible pass rush. So you don't get better just by bringing him back. You need to add to him. And you're potentially losing Reed. You're potentially losing Quentin Jefferson. So in Ziggy Ansah, we don't anticipate he's going to be back. So you've got holes to fill there.
Definitely. Yeah, I think we've said it. I don't think there's been an off season that's been more clear as to what they need, and it's pass rushers. So, but, you know, maybe that comes from, and I got heat for this the other day, LJ Collier. Maybe he becomes the impact pass rusher.
Who gave you heat?
Oh, it was a texter. Said it was the single dumbest thing he'd heard ever.
We should have shouldn't we have the magic wand music going when Dave is, you know, saying that about LJ Collier?
I hope he's right. I haven't written him off as much as I've been critical of the guy and making fun of his three tackles. I don't think you pull the plug and say, "Well, that was terrible. It didn't work."
I'm giving him a hard time, but he was right about Rasheem Green. Because Green, you were fired up about.
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought maybe he could be the first or second pass rusher, you know, coming into the season. He's very technical. He's very sound. He's very, you know, and I don't want to say he's not mechanical, but he's going to do pretty much the right thing a lot of times. The thing he doesn't really do that they need is, you know, this flashy off the edge type of guy. You know who I thought really could have been that guy? And I think he's developing pretty nicely is Jacob Martin. But, you know, you traded him away for, you know, Clowney, and it was a great trade. Mm-hmm. And you got Bill O'Brien to pay half of Clowney's salary for the year. And then, you know, you sent Barkevious Mingo down there. I think Bark made some plays last year, too. I really liked both of those guys. But, you know, and I thought they're good guys to have on your team. But I thought Jacob Martin would be the guy that could develop into that. But they traded him away for Clowney, which was a good deal there. So, and I wish him nothing but the best, because what a great kid Jacob Martin is. But yeah, I thought maybe Rasheem Green could develop into that guy. Now I'm more like, I think, again, he reminds me of Jeff Bryant, who's just steady and a guy who ended up with the third most sacks in Seahawk history. So, you know, and he had 1 year where he had 12, but other than that, it was like 7, 8, or I think he had 14 actually. But other than that, it was 7, 8 sacks, 6 sacks a year. And that's kind of what I think Rasheem Green is. But, you know, you need another guy to come off the edge that has some kind of quickness that can, you know, like a Cassius Marsh isn't one of those guys that is like that. I'm not saying him specifically, but that kind of a player. And that's going to have to come from the draft or from free agency. And to me, for whatever reason, the perfect guy was Yannick Ngakoue, because, you know what? Looking at him a couple of years ago and did the game down there in Jacksonville, he kind of fit that bill. But I feel like they're going to franchise tag him, Jacksonville, and he's probably not going to get away.
A couple other thoughts from these guys. Brock gave his thoughts on his step one, and then he'll give thoughts on two and three. But here's Brock Heward's step one.
I would love to see Schneider and Fitterer and Kirshner and Pete Carroll and Ken Norton and whatever 10 or 12 decision makers get in that room and say, okay, legal pads out. How many of the dudes on this roster that we have right now defensively can help win us a Super Bowl? That would be the first exercise. And I think they would say, oh my gosh, we've got some significant holes and problems.
Agree or disagree?
Well, I think that are we talking about safety and corner play maybe there? Because
Brock wants more overall speed.
Yeah. Well,
and youth.
I think we all agreed and we're pretty comfortable with Shaquille Griffin. But I just think Trey Flowers got a bad rap. At the end of the year, I feel like he's very physical. Now, speed, I don't know. Can he make up for that with length and smarts? Richard Sherman proved that you absolutely can.
Did it his whole career.
Yeah. I mean, look, his technique, and this is something I, sitting next to Moyer, would rave about, how his feet were always good, but he hardly ever missed a jam. If he was up on the line of scrimmage.
Talking about Sherman or Trey?
Sherman. Yeah, do you remember when Josh Gordon got juked by Baldwin in that Washington game a couple of years ago? It was very apparent that he just entirely missed the jam. I never saw that happen with Sherm. So you can make yourself a better player. Trey Flowers can. But, you know, I'm definitely not against going and getting another corner. It was kind of weird they didn't draft a corner last year. Mm-hmm. So, but then, you know, to me, I guess the impact player and all that stuff, and you're talking about coaches and everything, I would just say, look, we have to be more physical. We have to be more physical because, you know, that, you know, I was doing the football 101 thing on the XFL, the way they played the edge, you know, that Godwin, Igwebuke, and the other kid, is it Clark, the corner? I think Jeremy Clark, number 24. Anyway, they just played it very aggressively. And then, you know, they held a guy up, and then the D lineman comes and lays a huge hit on the guy. And I'm not saying that these are better players than what they have, but just the style of defense, I feel like, needs to be more physical and more aggressive and less sort of laying off and trying to not get beat.
And it feels like that speaks to the level of confidence that they lacked in the secondary. They just didn't trust
some of that,
guys.
I think.
So they wanted
trust
to play
was
safe.
Definitely an issue.
Man, that whole bend but don't break thing, and I guess it was all personnel related, but I just, I'm the same way, Dave. I feel like I'd like to see the defense be a little more aggressive, a lot more aggressive, and if you get beat over the top occasionally as a result of that, then that's the cost of doing business. Because I was thinking, I wrote a post today, 710sports.com, Bob, if you want to.
Where? All right. What did you say?
710sports.com.
Oh.
Well, my number one thing, you didn't ask, but I'll give it to you anyway. My top three, my number one is replacing Ken Norton. I think that kind of dovetails.
You're done with him.
With what we're talking about here.
He serves no purpose on this defense to you.
Yeah, and it's, I suppose it's rich because I even in the post I said, you know, I don't follow X's and O's. I'm not exactly sure about coverage schemes, but I watch the games and my two untrained eyes tell me that this defense has gotten worse since Ken Norton got here. And he wasn't good in Oakland either. And so I think that's one of the things where we're talking about all these things, and I know why. You know, should they bring Clowney back? What should they do with their other free agents? Are there other free agents from other teams that they can bring in to improve the defense? All these different working parts. But the number one thing they could do to improve the defense overnight is to replace the defensive coordinator, in my opinion. Because I don't think he's been doing the job here. And especially, you know, Ken Norton, you always heard about, oh, he's this fiery guy. You're going to see him. He's, you know, hair on fire and all this. Everybody's going to be all... Have you seen that from the Seahawks defense? And I know that that's just, you know, you can't really be fiery, and if you're not any good, it doesn't matter. But I just haven't really seen it. And so, yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, what they're seeing that you know, the untrained eyes in me aren't.
Well, what about that we hear that this is ultimately Pete's defense?
I want to say something really mean now.
No, go ahead, Dave.
Who do you think hates you more, Jerry DePoto or Ken Norton?
Ken's
probably
charts
DePoto
here.
Probably DePoto, but maybe give Norton some time. He might be like a closer at Emerald Downs.
Boy, Jim knows how to work people, I tell you what. But what about the idea that we hear this over and over and over? This is Pete's defense. Brings people in to run it. It's his defense. Now, I don't know if that's a throwaway comment that we all just say and assume is accurate, but really it is Ken Norton and, you know, with the nuances in this thing and the tweaks, and I'm going to do this, and he's got latitude to do all that? Or is it, in fact, Pete's defense and, hey, I brought you in to run it the way I want it run?
Mm-hmm.
You just follow directions, essentially.
Right, and this is how we're going to do it this year. I don't think that it could totally not be Ken Norton's fault. I mean, look, Ken Norton, whenever you want to look at it, it's a team, right? We divide it between offense and defense, but you have an overall strategy. And here's the reason why I wouldn't agree with that. It's just because a lot of times when you talk to coaches about why did you do this, and it seems very obvious, there's reasons. There's reasons why that we don't trust this guy, or we don't have the guys to get here, or, you know, the pass rush, things like that. So we basically coached the defense up so that we were able to win games, mm-hmm. that kept us in games. That's all we were there to do. And they end up winning 12 games because of that. So, I mean, I think, yeah, you look at the rankings and everything and how they were at the bottom, but I think also there is a... There's a way to look at your team overall, and this is what we want to do. We want to kind of rope-a-dope. We're going to let them go down the field a little bit. We're not going to be as aggressive, but we're not going to have one-play drives for touchdowns or two-play drives. We're going to make them earn it. And, you know, I was just looking at the beginning of the Cincinnati game, and, you know, it was the first game of the year, but, you know, Cincinnati had, I think, an 8 or 9 play drive and then like a 11 or 12-play drive in the first quarter and a half. You know, and so, and one of the reasons why is because Cody Barton, you guys heard me laughing in there as I was watching him run into the punter. It was such a rookie move, and I love Cody, but he's like a puppy dog, you know, all excited running in there. Hey, I'm going to block a punt. Oh, I just knocked over the punter. So they had to go back out on the field. And so, you know, that was, and they end up winning that one, what, 21-20?
Yeah.
I think was the score. And that's kind of how they were this year. So, yeah, again, it's.
Even before Ken, this is a team that did give up yards. They would, between the 20s, I remember watching, you know, when you had Sherm and you had Cam and you had Earl and you had all these, and Frank Clark and these guys in Bennett, they'd still give up those. I remember just, what's going on in the middle of the field? Why is it every tight end seems to find this spot and you know, be able to convert first downs? Now, they wouldn't give up any points, but it wasn't like they were three and outing everybody when it was that group either. So I'm not trying to say you're wrong about Ken Norton. I just don't really know how much he's got his hands on this versus what Pete is telling him to do. But this is a different group of players also. Again, all the guys I just listed that aren't there anymore. Frank Clark, Richard Sherman, Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, all those guys are gone. So he doesn't have the luxury of working with those guys the way, you know, Bradley did.
Don't you think he would have fired him by now? I mean, if it was that bad of a deal that he would have, the end of the season, they would have fired Ken Norton?
I would think so. I don't know that he's saying, hey, he's a great guy, I love him, so let's keep him around. I think he thinks he's ineffective and should be better, he thinks the talent's better than what they produced, I would assume.
Well, and Jim, I wouldn't say you're out of your mind or anything. I mean, look, that you go and look at the defensive numbers, and it's just not been up to snuff of what the defense has been in the past. But it was obvious, and again, I always, you know, you want to say, look, Pete Carroll knows what he's doing, right? I mean, he's done such a great job. And it's funny, I just find myself defending him, and it's ridiculous that he's been attacked and told that he's, you know, squandering Russell Wilson. It's just, he's had so much success. He's done it the right way. And so, and he did it well enough this year. If it was his big handprint on this defense, they won 11 games again, and they won one in the playoffs. So, yeah, we didn't get to the Super Bowl. It was disappointing, but, you know, they were really close to having a better opportunity. And so I guess I feel like it was more of just a team decision. Because if Ken Norton was doing things that were crazy and ridiculous, I mean, it's one thing, you know, if he can't coach guys up to run the defense, then that's a problem. You know, but they were running a defense that was collectively decided upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I'm just okay. Forget about Ken Norton in Seattle.
I was gonna
continue. I'm gonna belabor my point here and try and see if you can see my way of thinking here. In Oakland, he wasn't good either. And again, I wasn't following the Raiders. I'm just looking at the numbers, the overall numbers. They were 22nd in total defense in 2015, 26th in 2016, 23rd in 2017. Before he got here, the Seahawks were 11th, and they fell to 17th or something like that last year. And then, you know, I know everybody can say, well, yeah, you lost Earl Thomas and, you know, Sherman Bennett, all these different guys along the way. But it just makes me wonder. It's because you look at all these guys individually, and we've talked about this before, too. All these players on defense that we consider as being good players,
mm-hmm.
Jaron Reed, Quentin Jefferson, Jadeveon Clowney, all the linebackers, K.J. Wright, Michael mm-hmm. Kendricks, Bobby Wagner. We think Bradley McDougal is pretty good. We like Shaquille Griffin's season. Quandre Diggs made a huge difference coming over from Detroit with all the takeaways, 16 takeaways in his 5 games that he started. And yet the defense is still terrible. So what are you supposed to point at? It has to be the coach.
But all I'm saying is it might be Pete you point at. I just don't know. I'm not saying you're wrong. The numbers are telling the story. I'm not debating that at all. I just don't know that it's Norton that has complete autonomy there. And, hey, this is how I choose to run things. And Pete's like, hey, it's your baby. Go ahead. Or is Pete the puppet master saying, here's my defense. You run it to the best of your ability. But here's what I want done. I just don't.
Well, you know what?
We don't know that.
You could be right about that.
That's my only point.
Yeah.
The defense is bad. That's the easiest part of this conversation. There's no debating that.
I just, after a while, I'm going, well, why don't you guys try something different? Why don't you, like, take on blocks, blitz more?
Yeah.
I don't know, play more man-to-man coverage.
What were your other two?
All these different things.
The other two out of Jim's article, 710sports.com, his latest piece.
Well, my other two. So, number one, my top three things to fix the Seahawks, replace Ken Norton. Number two, and this would probably be controversial, too, but I'd let Clowney go. And instead of paying him $20 million, get two pure pass rushers. Now, Salk is saying keep Clowney and get two pure pass rushers, but I don't know if you can afford to do all of that. I just feel like Clowney, like you said, Bob, you had Clowney on the defense this year.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you love his versatility and everything he can do to be disruptive, but I think you're at a point now where you have to focus on the 28 sacks you had, and you need to improve in that area. And then third, I'd improve the offensive line. I'd sign Joe Thuney or whatever his name is there in New England. I heard Jake keeps talking about him. If Jake's talking about him, then I'm sold on him. And then you need a right tackle to replace Ifedi, too. And so I'd like to see that that offensive line upgraded with some guys who can pass block a little better than the guys they've had.
The 206 says that he agrees with you, Jim, but he admits to being the Nimrod that wanted to keep Fant over Dwayne Brown. So
He called himself the Nimrod.
Well, that's not really Nimrodish, though. That's, you know,
wanting to keep Fant over Dwayne Brown.
It's a little bit Nimrodish.
It's quite Nimrodish.
I'll hang in there with Nimrod.
Even though Brown is older, he's still considered amongst the best left tackles in football.
Yeah, but keep him when? When's the Nimrod talking about?
I don't know.
Time frame?
I
believe the Nimrod is talking about this next season.
This next season.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's take two.
Take two.
According to our own Shannon Dreher, Mitch Haniger underwent a second surgery called a microdiscectomy, for a disc in his back yesterday in L.A., a small repair of a vertebrae. He remains in the hospital recovering from that procedure. It is believed to have gone well, but there is still no timetable for his return.
Brutal.
He's probably glad at least they're not doing surgery on his junk. I mean, jeez.
Yeah, I think they already did that.
Awful.
Right? I mean,
the
this is
thing.
His, what, second
through.
Surgery in 3 weeks?
Ugh.
Yeah, he had a core surgery.
You know, I was talking about this in the pit. I'm so thankful that I never had any kind of back problems.
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah. I mean, and especially if you had surgery.
No, not yet.
Yeah. Yet, the key word there. Yeah, I mean, it's brutal when you get that. So I feel really bad for him. You know, it's just such high hopes and such a great guy and a tough guy. And, yeah, it's just too bad that this is gone. It's the biggest disappointment in sports to me, injuries. You know, you have a guy, and I'll trot this one out there again, Will Dissly.
Mm-hmm.
So disappointing, and it's frustrating for the player, too. I mean, they work so hard to get back out there, and I really, heart goes out to him, and hopefully Mitch Haniger can make a comeback from this.
Bad basketball night in the state of Washington last night as UW dropped their seventh straight to USC, 62-56, and the Cougs fell to the Bruins, 86-83.
I told you, Dave.
Apparently, the big comeback is going to be delayed by one game.
Is that what? Okay.
I said it was USC. It's next week. Who do they play this week coming up?
They got UCLA tomorrow.
Yeah. They're going to go. Yeah,
they're going to lose
over
there.
To Pauley Pavilion. Is it still?
Pauley Pavilion.
Yeah. Well,
you watch that game, you have no confidence that they're going to beat UCLA. None. So I watched that game. I was going to text you. Are you watching? They can't shoot.
Yeah, they
couldn't score.
35% overall. I think McDaniels was the only kid shooting 50%.
It was brutal.
Okay, well, here's something to like. Bringing him off the bench the last two games, he's got 19 and 16. So they found the formula for Jaden McDaniels.
Yeah,
are you buying? Is it nobody?
You really are
that?
Glass half full with this team. I like that.
Well, I like Hopkins. I think he's a really good coach. I was sort of disappointed at the end of the Coug game. End of regulation,
man.
That possession. Casey Jacobson on Pac-12 Network was kind of going off about it because Bonton took a Hail Mary type of shot.
28-footer.
Yeah, and he could have driven it in. He had time.
Wasted a great pass in that game. Did you see the highlight of that behind the back pass?
Oh, the behind-the-back pass.
To his left.
I didn't.
Beautiful.
It was
beautiful, man.
Yeah, I heard we were ahead by 12 at one point. Jeff Pollard had a career high.
Good. Yeah.
Four three-pointers.
He looks gimpy out there.
He looks really tired.
Well, he was overmatched by Riley in the overtime. We just couldn't stop the big fella.
Well, just watching that guy run, he looks like he's laboring a bit, but he was hitting shots, and he seemed really steady.
Yeah, he's a workhorse.
But in the overtime period, who's the kid's name again?
Riley.
Riley. God, he had 9 points, and you know he was just all over the boards, and it looked like Pollard was a little bit gassed.
All right, coming up, we're not the only ones upset with the Astros' attempts at apologizing yesterday. We're going to hear from some guys that actually play in the game. Cody Bellinger, Sean Manaea, weighing in on this whole thing. That's coming up with Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
Coming up at 4 o'clock, the professor, John Clayton, will join us here with Bob, Dave, and more. Meanwhile, the story continues to trickle out there on the Houston Astros' attempts at cheating, or I guess it wasn't really an attempt. They did it. They did it for quite some time, and different people speaking on behalf of them, those speaking out against them. couple of former, or not former, but a couple of players that are out there on other teams. You got Sean Manaea of the A's giving his take on the Astros and what they did.
They cheated. They've cheated the game. They've cheated us as players, and it's that they can't take responsibility for their actions and try to make things better. Instead, they're just sweeping things under the rug and just doing their own thing. And to me, that just doesn't sit right.
You know, I have to say, I'm really happy with the other players' responses to this. Because I thought maybe, because sometimes in baseball there's this like unwritten code and, just certain things you don't do. You don't run slow and admire your home run afterwards. And I thought there was just going to be this whole good old boy thing where they all sort of protected one another on this. It's been quite the opposite.
It's because these guys on the receiving end of this.
Yeah.
So they're like, hey, we lost games to these clowns, perhaps because they had that advantage. I mean, maybe they would have won anyway. Who knows? We'll never know. But, I totally get it. And then Cody Bellinger, obviously, playing for the Dodgers, had some thoughts on Jim Crane's attempted apology.
I thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. These guys were cheating for 3 years. I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us. I know personally I lost respect for those guys. I think I would say everyone in the show in the big leagues lost respect for those guys. I don't know what human hits a walk-off home run against Aroldis Chapman to send your team to the World Series. And one has the thought to say, don't rip my jersey off, but two, go in the tunnel, change your shirt, and then come out and do your interview. Like, that makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me, because I know me. Gary Sanchez said yesterday, you can rip my shirt off, my pants off. I set my team in the World Series off for Aroldis Chapman in the ninth inning at home. You can do, I'm going crazy.
Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Fair point. I mean, the Astros have steadfastly denied the buzzer thing. They haven't denied the sign stealing, but the whole buzzer thing and, Altuve saying, don't rip my jersey off. They're saying, no, none of us used it. And Carlos Correa, I was watching him last night saying, I know for a fact that didn't happen. And that story keeps coming up. He was adamant that it was untrue. But they've lost, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Dave. They've lost they've lost any slack. Any kind of doubt you might throw somebody's way, they've lost it.
After hearing Bellinger there, I thought, well, I hope the Astros have a terrible season. But after hearing Bellinger, I'm thinking, man, it'd be fun to see the Astros and Dodgers in the World Series this year, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You think they can get back there without knowing what pitch is coming?
We're going to find out. They got a lot of pressure, man, because as soon as one of them goes into a slump, if Altuve goes into a slump or Springer or Correa, they're going to go, oh, well, I guess that's what happens when you don't know what pitch is coming like the rest of the league, huh?
They're going to hear all of it season.
Oh, yeah.
So I just love that everybody in the MLB has turned on them because, there's a lot of, hey, protect the game and protect the other players. And you know how hard it is. And a lot of times players have sympathy for other players. And
not now.
They've
lost the benefit of the doubt.
This is awesome. I'm loving it.
Well, we wondered what's going to happen when they go to a visiting ballpark. Right. Is the opposition going to start plunking these guys? Are we going to see it in every city? What's going to go on? Here's Buster Olney talking about the potential for vigilante justice.
I don't think there's going to be a lot like we saw from Ryan Dempster with Alex Rodriguez, where it's going to be first inning, right out of the gate, throw four pitches at some hitter's head or something like that. I think it's going to be more subtle than that, that it'll be the sixth inning and there are two outs and there's nobody on base and boom, somebody gets one in the ribs. And there's not really a great response to that. Now, you're going to have the warning system. Major League Baseball certainly will look series to series what's potential. But I don't think there's anything they can do about it. And do I believe that there'll be a pound of flesh extracted at some point during the year? Absolutely, because we've never seen the type of anger aimed at this particular group of players from peers in the way we do with this one. And it's only been made worse by these multiple attempts at trying to apologize.
And then one more from Buster on another thing we were talking about, the Hall of Fame voting, what's going to happen, because we've seen how some voters treat steroid users or those that weren't even technically found guilty of using it, but everybody assumes they have. They have not made their way into the Hall of Fame. So how are they going to approach these guys who put the integrity of the game in question?
There's been a question already. You know, how does this affect, the Hall of Fame legacy moving forward for guys like Beltran, for Justin Verlander? Look, Justin Verlander is a first ballot, should be a unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame. Would it shock me if, like Roberto Alomar, that there's some penance placed upon him by the writers? No, it wouldn't. And I think that, you know, potentially could happen with some of the All-Star voting with the other players, because the anger is so deep.
It's deep. It's deep. There was I retweeted this tweet from Trevor Bauer that we saw today. The quote was, quote, "We don't think it affected the game." He's talking about Crane. "You're either lying or you're a bleeping idiot. And you don't become a billionaire owner of a team by being a bleeping idiot. So you're lying."
That's exactly what we talked about yesterday. You don't get to have billions of dollars without being a really smart person. I don't care who you are unless you inherit it.
Right.
But, you know, that to me, that it's surprising that Trevor Bauer would have something to say, right?
Yeah, right.
But yeah,
a shrinking violet.
Remember when we talked to Marco Gonzalez and I asked him, you know, okay, let's say that somebody does rush the mound. What's your strategy? And he said, wait for Tom Murphy.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to come down to that, man. I mean, Marco's a guy who I understand on game day that he gets a super focused, you know, kind of almost angry, nasty attitude, and he gets into a game and maybe sees something that he doesn't like. I could see him, you know, throwing it at a Houston Astro.
He's made it clear how he feels about this, too, and he made it clear before this ever came out.
Yeah, especially when you're a non-contending team, you can get away with it. And Buster only talking about two outs, nobody on, that's when you do it. No, I think, especially if you're a non-contending team, but even if you're a contending team, I think you do it with the bases loaded and a tie game. If you really want to make sure that no one thinks it's intentional, just throw it, just huck it right at Altuve, even when the bases are loaded. And if it means you lose the game that night, you lose the game, but in some way you get your redemption that way. I know it's a bad thing. You know, the other thing I'm looking at here, too.
It's a good thing Jim's not a head coach or a manager, right?
No, but if
I'm going for three at all costs, I don't care what's
okay. How about if you're Marco, though, and your team is, what, 40 and 75?
Well, yeah, that's a different, but you're talking a contending team where every game might matter.
Well, it just depends on how mad you are. You know, when you're really mad, you just do things that don't make sense. You're not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would enjoy it anyway. This I'd never heard of Mike Bolsinger, but have you heard what he's doing?
Yeah, former Blue Jays pitcher.
And he's suing the Astros because he went back and he saw, boy, August 4th was a night that they really went crazy with stealing the signs, and that was the last game he pitched in the major leagues, and so then he had to go to Japan and do all these different things, so he's suing the Astros over their cheating.
I don't know what kind of case he has. It's been a long time since I've been a trial lawyer.
I like that he's doing it, though.
You like that?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Well, maybe he'll. I mean, because I think he wants a settlement for himself, but I think more importantly, he wants all of their World Series shares donated to charity. And yeah, man, I get his anger. I get it. I can't tell anybody not to be mad or not. It's not a big deal. Stop over here. I don't think they are.
Well, I guess it would be the same thing with steroids, too. But if you're a pitcher, you're like, this guy's messing with my career, man. And there's lots of money to be made. Mm-hmm. And there are, you know, certain, you know, we always talk about the Mendoza line, mm-hmm. and how, like, it's, you know, if you're below that, if you're above it, that's a huge number, even if it's only 2 points, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, if that came down to, they always say, like, you know, it comes down to a hit here and a hit there or a strikeout here that makes a big difference in a guy's career.
All right, this next story is big news for Jim Moore, of all people. A bill to allow legalized sports gambling in tribal casinos of Washington is moving closer to being finalized, and Jim is doing cartwheels around the studio as we speak. We're going to talk about it next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
A Coming up at the top of the hour, the Professor John Clayton will join us on the program. A reminder, you can listen to our show via the 710 Sports app. It's powered by Dubin Law Group. So coming up at the top, we'll talk some NFL. Meanwhile, Jim, tell me how, on a scale of 1 to 10, your level of joy and happiness when you see this news that a bill to allow legalized sports gambling in tribal casinos of Washington is moving closer to being finalized.
Yeah, it just strikes me as long overdue. I think people over in England are kind of going, what are they doing over there? It's taking them this long because it's been legal over there forever. And I think there's 14 states where it's legal right now. And so we'll see what comes of this. The House voted 25-7 to approve it. What was it last night? The Senate? Somewhere. Yeah, the Senate.
So it's
83-14. So now.
Yeah, a companion bill needs to pass in the Senate before it can reach Governor Jay Inslee's desk to become a law.
I don't know if it's going to be ready by the time fall gets here for football season, but I thought Representative Drew Stokesbury said it best. It permits adults to engage in an activity that doesn't harm other people. And that's how I've always felt about it. You know?
What
if you want to make a bet on a team, you know, it's like, and if you lose, you're hurting yourself, but no one else.
What, really. What's the argument against, and I'm not even a gambler, but what is the argument against legalized gambling?
Yeah, that was my question, because it was, 83-14, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So what do the 14 say? Is it morality? Is it that the person's going to go into financial disrepair because of it? There's going to be addictions popping up because of this. You know, I feel like if you're that kind of person, you could have found your way into doing it, you know, whether it's legal or not.
It's right. So funny to me, though.
I've heard there are avenues to gamble even where it's not legal.
You've heard that, too?
That's what I've heard.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, that's, I feel like that would be the only thing, the only reason why, you know, and I think the NFL would make the argument that they don't like that, you know, an official or a player could possibly be tempted. Who's the dumb, you know what I want to call him? The donkey. Player that went and bet. He was like from the Arizona Cardinals. It's a guy recently that
that's
he even identified himself.
Yeah. But he didn't bet on games he was involved player. In, I don't think.
Yeah, but
you know,
I mean,
he did like a parlay bet or something. I vaguely remember that story.
But still, I mean, you know, once you get caught. And it's
Josh Shaw.
He was an Arizona player. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah. Defensive back for the Cardinals.
Right. And I don't know how he got caught or how he ended up on this list, but. You know, but once, you know, that happens, it's like the Pete Rose thing. I mean, yeah, I was gambling, you know, I was betting on my team, not against them. But, you know, once that door's opened up, you go, yeah, sure, right. You know, like you said earlier, Bob, your credibility kind of goes bye-bye. Once you...
Yeah, you lose the benefit of the doubt.
Right. So, you know, that's what I guess what I would say, you know, are the things against it. But I'm kind of with you, Jim, where I feel like it's sort of a victimless crime. You know, you're hurting yourself.
I mean, are they afraid people are going to lose their life savings because they've got an issue? They've got their gambling addicts.
Yeah, okay. Well, maybe so. But I mean, I think it's funny in a state where you have horse racing, you have pull tabs, you've got lottery tickets, you've got craps tables, blackjack tables, poker rooms. And so, how is sports betting different from that?
I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
I don't get it.
Yeah, if you're a gambling addict, you can lose. There's plenty of ways to lose your money.
You can find all kinds of avenues to lose your money. And as we said, I think there are other avenues to bet on games that, you know, aren't above board. That's what I've heard. But it seems a weird thing to take a stance against. I would love to talk to those 14 and just say, educate me. I'm not a gambler, so I don't really know. We're getting a bunch of different answers from the texters. 710-710 is the text line. I don't know which one is accurate. Some are saying, oh, well, the government needs to get their cut, and others saying, you know, it's they don't want to affect the lottery. I don't know what's true.
Well, and then there's another outfit, Maverick Gaming, that's going to legally challenge this ruling, I think, because they own some smaller card rooms. They believe that sports betting should be allowed in these card rooms, too. They own 19 of the 44 that are in the state. But I think what they're trying to do is at least take a step toward legalizing sports gambling in a bigger way, and at least the tribal, they can have some control there a little bit. And then you can use your app. You take your phone and bet on your phone, but you have to be in the casino to be able to do that. So at least I think it's a positive step. And, you know, the other thing, you can bet on the Seahawks once this thing gets going, but you can't bet on college teams that are in the state.
You can't bet on college.
No.
Okay.
So you can't bet on Washington, Washington State, Eastern.
So that way you remove any possibility of influencing players, or I guess local player. All right.
Seems because they're young and innocent.
Yeah, you can.
Because once you start betting on that, then you start betting on high school kids, and then you start betting on Little League,
Little League World Series.
Who would ever do that?
That's when you look at somebody and say, "You have a problem, my friend. You have a problem."
Yeah. So,
and or the Pro Bowl.
It's or the Army Navy game.
Did you ever bet on the lingerie football league? You covered that for a bit.
No, I don't think I did that.
You didn't do that?
No.
Okay.
I didn't stoop to those levels. Bob.
That would have been stooping beyond Little League World Series.
But really, I mean, if you have something against this, I'm wondering what it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you have all these other legal forms of gambling in this state.
There might be an obvious answer that we're missing, but I feel like it seems like an obvious solution. Why isn't it legal? It's not.
And all these other forms of gambling, the odds are worse than trying to pick one of two teams to win a game. So, it's just.
253 says, victimless crime, like insider trading.
Oh.
I think that was directed for you, Jim.
Yes, I know it was directed for me. When's Michael Kendricks? He could be sentenced in, the year 2030 or what?
He's not going to jail, Jim.
Well, we'll see about that. We'll find out in March.
Let's go find a venue and you and I can bet.
No, I don't. I've already bet on that and lost $100 to Danny.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'll take that action. I'll bet with both hands.
You talk about
Jim.
Being pathetic. I mean, that's pretty low when you're betting $100 on a guy going to jail.
As Jim says, I'll lay the lumber. I'll bet with both hands. All those terms.
I still got to compare it, though. That or Little League World Series.
Betting on a guy going to jail is worse than betting on Little Leaguers.
Is it? I love we're just parsing the bottom.
I don't know.
Where is Jim truly scraped
no.
bottom?
No, I sat here sometimes. I thought, man, if Kendricks went to jail and Danny was paying me $100, I think I'd feel bad about that. I do have a conscience. I mean, there's,
Did you want him to go just so you could win the bet?
No. I just, from what I read about the case, in-depth stories about the case, other people who have been in his situation went to jail. That's what I made the bet on.
Yeah, but he's high profile with money.
Yeah.
You know how that works. So I would be stunned if he served a minute in behind bars. I think I could see restitution of some sort, right? Where he's, community service and pay a fine and whatever. But I don't think he's going.
Yeah, but if he was Joe Blow,
he'd probably be still living there. Yeah, if it were you or I. We'd be making a call from a phone in there with a very limited amount of time. All right, coming up, lots of cuts in the NFL. We're Joe Schmagegi. That's who we are. Cuts in the NFL, some names out there I think a lot of people are familiar with. We'll get into that with the professor and see if he thinks there's anybody the Seahawks should be taking interest in. That's next with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.